Hello and welcome back to the Unseen Incidents podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and on this week's episodes, we're looking at Girona, Aston Villa and Bayer Leverkusen and asking how seriously should we take these teams? It feels like this is maximising their possession capabilities as well, because immediately they've just flown up.
Yeah.
So they've now put themselves in a category of two, essentially, when it comes to attacking in this possession way. And to me, that's a really good sign for what comes next for them. We're opening up the burn book.
Atrocious. Don't tell me when and how to have fun. Don't force me into a formatted structure of fun. If this social scenario is so limp and flaccid that you need to codify a structure within it in order for everybody to have fun, I'm not going to be there.
While over on the paid side, we're finding a defensive midfielder for Liverpool. Okay, he's not a 21-year-old who's going to suddenly turn into a superstar. But on the other hand, he also is not going to come in and be like totally overawed by like proper football. Like, he's playing in a proper league for a proper side. He's going to come in and be like, I know how this works. He's got the physical materials to kind of stand up in the Premier League. I just think he's a good player, and I suspect that you could get him for a fairly reasonable fee. And we're bringing you our 10 essentials, which is in no way a ripoff. That's all in this week's episodes of Unseen Incidents. Okay, so we're back for another double bill. Pete, how are you doing? How are things?
I am quite well, Patrick. Hello. I've had a couple of lunchtime beers. So, you know, coming into this podcast...
Slightly
oiled. Yeah, so it was my work team's Christmas like lunch afternoon thing today. Went, got a free lunch. It was a vegan lunch, actually. It was a vegan place. We basically, for whatever ridiculous reason in work, we have this like Wheel of Fortune thing. So it's essentially like a whiteboard, but it's a spinning wheel and you write various things in each segment. And it's used to usually determine what lunch we buy on like shoot days on set. And somebody put in a vegan restaurant for our Christmas dinner, and it was actually pretty good. Vegan burger, the vegan burger element of it was good. The fake bacon, I don't think the fake bacon industry is there yet.
No, so I agree.
It's not crispy enough. It's kind of too doughy, too soft. The taste is there, but the texture is way off. And for me, the bacon texture is the biggest thing, probably, for bacon. I'm a big crispy bacon guy. Like, I think
the taste is basically just salt, really. Salt and fat.
I think anybody who likes their bacon soft should be on the register, personally.
I agree with that.
Vegan place was actually pretty good. And then, a couple of lunchtime beers, and then slipped away before they went to Laser Quest. So it was actually been a really, really like optimal day in terms of festivities and my capacity to stomach all or that amount of festivities. How are things going with you, Patrick?
I'm stressed, Pete. I'm stressed.
Yeah, I've heard.
I say that like, the major stress is over-ish in that, like, exchanged on the house, we complete and we move in on Friday. Slight worry today where someone was like, we may need to try and get the money early because, like, the people selling to us, like, their solicitors got some issue with, like, some shit. So I could live without that. And baby, not that keen about new nursery. People coming to pack up the house tomorrow. It's all a little bit like, I just want everyone to leave me alone.
Yeah.
So that I can sit down and play The Witcher 3. Like, that's all I want to do. I just want to be left to do that and to not have a new job going on my list. Like, every job I tick off my list, there are like three more coming. So it's just like not very satisfying.
Yeah, it's just, you would like to be that like 16-year-old teenager again with almost zero things to do. And zero responsibility. 100%. And just kind of smash video games.
Not video games, just this one.
Just The Witcher.
Which I'm really enjoying. And yeah, it's good. It's good. And you're right. Like, I'm now in Skellige on The Witcher 3.
Kind of racist.
And as
though,
you
right?
say, they're all like fake Northern Irish.
But they're also all like little trolls. They're like little ugly weather-beaten trolls. As in like not troll the mythical creature, troll the like ugly little person type.
I mean, if this were a visual podcast, like, I assume that it's giving me good preparation for when I come to Northern Ireland for your wedding.
Yeah.
Because I'm wandering around Skellige and everybody is like, they're either trying to involve me in a centuries-old blood feud, or they're sending me to talk to a ghost that lives in a haunted lighthouse, which is what I assume Northern Irish life is like.
Yeah,
right?
About 70% of it, sure.
I've also been drunk. Because, you know, like, you pick up your food and drink, and then, like, I'm sometimes in the middle of battle, you're like, right, okay, what have I got equipped? Just, like, press that button
mead.
And, like, give me a little bit of... And it's literally mead. And then I'm stumbling around, pissed, like, trying to kill a monster, just, like, waving my sword around like a lunatic. And I was like, this is an authentic... You know what? I do
they've
feel
done
they've
the
got
research.
Something true... They've got something true to the character of the Northern Irish experience, is my take on it. And you literally lift a pint of Guinness to your lips as I said that.
Poured from the non-sponsored Nitro Surge. Again, has featured on the podcast before. Incredible invention. We're nothing if not accurate to the stereotype.
Yeah, when the Packers were like, you should take everything in your like kind of hand luggage, as it were, that is breakable and that we could destroy. I was just like, put the Nitro Surge in there with my laptop. If I arrive and the Nitro Surge is fucked, it's going to be like weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. It would ruin the entire move. At that point, I would just burn it down and start again.
I mean, look, it's getting to be a quite enticing prospect. But we digress. It's just enough of this, introductory banter. I really fucking hate the word banter, you know? I really hate it. Do you remember when you were at uni and it was like, you heard it 1,600 times a day?
Yeah.
Like, banter, standard, people would say that.
Thank you.
Lad was absolutely...
I mean, you've made your opinions on lad very clear. Mm. Banter, it is quite a laddish term. Although I do feel that when I was at uni, I was very, very open to all of that culture. When I say open, course. I was entirely immersed in it. I was fully...
Yeah, I bet you were intolerable at uni.
Yeah, like sports club, Wednesday night, all out in blue shirts and club tie. Like, insufferable. More so than I am now. Ironically, this is like a palatable version of me.
Emma said to me the other day, she was just like, I like listening to the podcast because it's nice to hear from Pete and I forget that he's an intelligent man. And I was just like, I love that, like, when she goes any period without talking to you, in her memory, you turn into like this little kind of like beer swilling homunculus.
Sure.
And then she talks to you again. And I'm like, I said to her, I was like, you do know that like Pete has like postgraduate education. Mm. Like, what are you talking about? And she's like, yeah, but you know.
But you know,
he's like a hockey lad, isn't he? And I was like, yeah,
that's at heart,
yeah, exactly it. But let's get on with this. Okay, so today what we're talking about is there are various teams around Europe that are in unusual positions, shall we say. In Spain, we've got Girona, who are actually in second right now, I think, according to FB Ref, but level on points with Real Madrid in top spot. We've got Bayer Leverkusen, who are top in Germany ahead of Harry Kane's Bayern Munich, as we're like obliged to call it. And people are saying, could this be the year? Which is kind of a thing that's hung over Leverkusen forever. And then in the Premier League, we've got Aston Villa, who are currently in fourth spot. And people are asking seriously, especially after they beat Spurs at the weekend, is Champions League football a real possibility for them? So the question is, how serious are they? Can Girona win La Liga or end up in the top four? Can Leverkusen win the Bundesliga? Can Aston Villa get Champions League football? So I think we should probably start with Bayer Leverkusen, because they are in the most commanding position, I guess you would say. Like, they are actually top of the Bundesliga. They are unbeaten so far. They're one of three unbeaten teams in Europe's top five leagues, along with Bayern Munich, but also with Nice, surprisingly enough. And they've dropped points once, which was away at Bayern Munich. So they are absolutely flying. Just first impression, I'd love it to happen for Leverkusen.
Oh, absolutely.
But you almost immediately start looking for reasons why it's maybe a bit of a mirage. What's your initial take on the Leverkusen situation?
For me, with the Bundesliga and with Bayern, it's almost foolish to think that anybody else would back anybody other than Bayern to win that league ever, really, in any given season at the start of any year. But when you look at how the Bundesliga's panned out so far this year, this season, when you look at how teams have played, Bayern have obviously been Bayern. Bayern have added Harry Kane. Bayern have destroyed loads of teams. Harry Kane scored a ridiculous amount of goals. They are by far and away the like highest performers in Europe in terms of like expected goal difference per 90.
Mm.
But the only other team in the Bundesliga that's remotely close to them in terms of how they're playing and how they're managing games and the kind of results they're getting are Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah.
And everything about Leverkusen's kind of play so far has been really Bayern-esque, like quite good. Like you can see the influence that people like Guardiola have had on Alonso in that Leverkusen, like they're not, this isn't, the way they're playing doesn't seem like this is a one-off or a big purple patch. And it is, they are overperforming. They think they're the third most overperforming team in Europe in terms of points. They think they've got about 8 points more than their underlying numbers should suggest. But in terms of how they're playing, they're actually playing really well, really cultured, really sensibly. You know, they're slow, they're measured and deliberate in possession. They're really tight and structured out of possession. Their press is really good, while not quite as aggressive as some of the others in terms of passes per defensive action. It's really, really successful. I think the underlying stats show that it's the most successful press in the Bundesliga in terms of high turnovers as well as shots from high turnovers. So everything they're kind of doing is playing like a team as dominant as Bayern would. So for me, of all the teams that we are going to speak about today in terms of slightly overperforming or out of place, for me, their standard, the way they've played and everything kind of about their season so far, it's by far the most sustainable, in my opinion. By far the most sustainable.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe that's a disservice to Villa.
Well, I don't know. We'll come back to that later. But I mean, yeah, their numbers are title contention numbers. And they're not that far off Bayern Munich numbers. Like, okay, their XG difference is like nothing like it. But they've scored 37 and they've conceded 10, I think, which is like absolutely the kind of form you expect from title. I mean, in fact, that attack is just like absolutely flying.
Yeah. They're actually different the same as Man City's as well. Plus 1.1.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that it's interesting to see the stylistic stuff. Like that's the stuff that makes you feel like some kind of tweaks here and there can mean that they stay in contention. I guess the questions are about the people who've gone off really, really hot. So there are a load of guys in this team right now who are flying, right?
Yeah.
So obviously you've got Boniface, who's got 7 goals and 5 assists already and is actually underperforming his XG. I think he's got like 10 XG, which is pretty crazy stuff. You've got Grimaldo, who's got 7 goals, I think. But like nearly a third of his shots are coming from like set pieces. Florian Wirtz, 8 goal involvements in 10 games. Just like we'll go into these guys in a bit more detail. But like there are loads and loads of guys like really, really flying. And then that has been married to this rock solid structure, like you're saying. It's the dialogue about it is very similar to a kind of Arteta at Arsenal, right? As in it's like, here's the influence of Guardiola. They are slow. They do play in this kind of very patient build-up way. They control pretty much the entire pitch. What's interesting is they're not a particularly hard pressing side, but they are a very effective pressing side, which is interesting. Like that's something that I'm intrigued by because they're kind of lower half of the Bundesliga for passes per defensive action, as in they attempt a defensive action, you know, much less often than most teams in the league, but they're top for high turnovers. Those are winning the ball back in the opposition's third. They're top for shot ending high turnovers, you know, 50% more shot ending high turnovers than Bayern. So they win the ball more effectively than anybody else. And when they win it, they convert it into shooting opportunities more effectively than everybody else. And as a result, they've scored the second most goals from high turnovers. They're on 4 behind Stuttgart's 6. So they are really pressing up. They are forcing teams to play in a kind of restricted space. And it looks like in my opinion, that is how I would go about trying to build a good side. I'd say this is the style that we're going to play. And we'll kind of mix and match pieces here and there. And we'll need to gradually build depth. And depth is something we'll come back to. But essentially, we need to have our tactical imprint now. And we just need to stick to it kind of come what may. Because actually, it's not terribly normal to play this way in the Bundesliga. The Bundesliga is normally extremely end-to-end, loads of turnovers all over the pitch, like tons of possessions. So the idea of possessions, which I think comes out of like ice hockey and baseball, basketball really. So like just the number of times that possession changes hands in a game, that tends to be super, super high in the Bundesliga relative to like, well, in the past Serie A, but certainly in comparison to say Ligue 1. It's a much higher pace, and La Liga as well. So it's good to see this happening because, in my opinion, I do think that this kind of suits Leverkusen's talent. Like, it feels like for a long time they've needed a proper coach to come in, take charge of this team and get them playing in a particular style, and that they did have the talent to play possession football in a way that they weren't. They were always this helter-skelter team, and that was kind of fine because historically they've had some really great breakaway attackers, you know, whether it's Bailey or Diaby or Havertz, you know, now Wirtz, even when they had Kevin Volland, like they had all these guys who were really good in breakaway football. But it feels like this is maximizing their possession capabilities as well, because immediately they've just flown up. You know, these open play pass sequences, they've got the most of those with 10 plus passes in the Bundesliga, way more than Bayern, way more than Stuttgart. The second most build up attacks in the league, one behind Bayern, but 30 more than third place.
Yeah.
So they've now put themselves in a category of two, essentially, when it comes to play to attacking in this possession way. And to me, that's a really good sign for what comes next for them, because let's not forget, this is going to be his first full season, right, Xavi Alonso?
Yeah, so he came in October last year, I think it was. He came in 13 months ago when they were in the relegation, and now we're talking about them as legitimate title contenders, like a month over a year, and he hasn't even had a full season in terms of like start to finish full season. He's inherited this squad. And I think a large part of this success has also come down to them just really intelligently filling holes that needed filled, either with technical quality or just experience. And yeah, like you say, it is them and Bayern and everybody else in the league in terms of how they're playing football. They're playing the slow, measured, controlled football. And most importantly, they're just super solid at the back. Like, they are super structured, regimented, and really, really difficult to kind of break down and score against. And also, that goes a long way against most teams in the Bundesliga. The Bundesliga isn't the strongest league, let's be honest. But what was most impressive about their result against Bayern, 2-2 away, was one, the resilience that they showed when they went down early. I think Harry Kane scored after 7 minutes. But two, was Alonso's ability to, when his system that he's put in place, this rigid system, wasn't working, he was able to change it. Because in the first like 15, 20 minutes, Bayern bypassed their press pretty easily, like almost without breaking a sweat. And then Alonso changed, sat deeper, actually almost played more of a 4-4-2, and it completely changed the game. And that combination of things, really solid at the back, really good press, but also tactical awareness and ability to change and react to the best team in the league as well, and go away and take points against them, especially after you've gone down so early as well. Like, that's such a huge result, and it's a really, really good indicator that this team can genuinely keep up this pace. And like I said, this isn't overperformance, like 8 points or so overperforming their underlying numbers, but it wouldn't be outrageous for them to keep this up. Like, it would be outrageous, but it wouldn't be unheard of. So
no,
on their current pace, if they were to continue to perform as they're performing and having the same underlying numbers across an entire season, that would have them at about a 23 point overperformance by the end of a 34 game Bundesliga season. Now, that sounds a bit mad, and it is, but it's not completely unreasonable. Liverpool's Premier League title win was a 25 point overperformance. Atleti's La Liga win in 2021 was a 20-point overperformance. Like, these things do happen. Seasons do go like this. I think, you know, I think Leicester's was about a 15-point overperformance at the end of it. It wouldn't be absolutely outrageous or unheard of that they are able to keep this pace up and kind of continue.
Good teams always overperform.
Yeah,
like, Man City overperform every season. Every season. It just
happens. Not quite 20 points, to be fair. But sure.
Sure, but like they overperform every year. If you're one of the top teams in the league, you do just tend to overperform because like expected points even if you had like 3xg in a game and another team had like 0.5xg, expected points won't give you 3 points for that game. It'll give you like 2.1 or something. You know, well, realistically, like, you are going to win that game almost all the time. And if you do win it, you get 3 points. Yeah. So, like, you're always overperforming.
Like, really good attacking players who are in really good form, finishing really well, like, and efficiently. And that just kind of throws, like, and immediately you're overperforming because you're just converting a lot higher chances in terms of goals versus the actual rate at which an average player would convert them.
There's also pressure, which we don't know from XG. Like, pressure, well, I think only StatsBomb has this, where, like, how a player is under pressure when they take a shot. Obviously, that's something where, like, it makes a huge difference, like, how much pressure you're under. So it may be that, you know, a player's getting a shot off, but a centre-back is right there jockeying them defensively, or in attack, those shots are a little bit more open than they might be for other sides, which is probably the case in the Bundesliga. And to be honest, when you watch Leverkusen, you're like, these are a lot of free shots. so those are factors too, I think.
Yeah. But like, all in all, the overperformance isn't so staggering that it isn't necessarily outrageous that it would carry on or be sustainable. But also the way they're playing kind of fills me with a lot of hope that it really could. Or at least, even if they do kind of go off the boil a little bit, I don't think they'll go off the boil that much. Because again, all of the components they've built so far, like the engine of that team in terms of their system and how it works, all of those components are in the right place. And everything kind of works and everything is smart and their squad is set up. They filled holes that they needed to fill. They brought in more mature players to kind of balance out their kind of young superstars like Wirtz. And Alonso has already shown that he's seemingly a really, really good manager despite his, I suppose, inexperience at this level in management. So will it happen? That's a different thing. Could it happen? Absolutely. Because everything they're doing right. And they've ticked a lot of boxes. And it's kind of like damage limitations for me in that I don't see this team going off a cliff. I don't see this team just capitulating and all of a sudden overnight being like, oh, well, we had a really good start to the season, but now we're going to finish like seventh. Like, I can see that with other teams in Europe. I don't see that with this team.
Yes. Okay. So we're now kind of getting to the yeah, but section. Which I think is...
Yeah, there always is going to be a but with these kind of scenarios, though, right?
Yes. And I mean, and they have had... Basically, everyone has been flying. You know, like, Wirtz, obviously, like, he's looked like this player for a long time, and now he's fit and he's amazing. Chances created per 90 is at nearly 3 a game. This is hyper elite. He's not even 21. Like, Boniface has been sensational, and I think... He has both been sensational and Leverkusen are really good at getting him high-quality chances. He's at over 5 shots per game. That's the most in the league. His XG is elite. It's 0.83, which I think later when we come onto Ollie Watkins, it's the same as Watkins. Only Kane has more. But the problem... And you know, Grimaldo's been sensational and Xhaka has been sensational. But like when you look at all this stuff, then you do sort of think if everyone's been really, really good, like Jonas Hoffmann has 10 goals and assists in 12 matches. Like you do wonder what it looks like when you get into a replacement player. And so my slight concerns here are, one, they've had unbelievable consistency in the lineup. So they've started the same lineup in 8 out of 12 games. And I was looking at the number of minutes their players have, and they have 11 players with about 880 minutes or more. Yeah. You know, so that's like getting on for 10 full matches. And then the 12th most used player in the squad has 246 minutes. So there's an enormous drop off from the first 11 to like the next most used player. Whereas at Bayern, to get a player with as few minutes as 246, you'd have to go to the 17th most used. So they've got 16 players with more minutes than that. So they're rotating more. And that's down to injuries and Tuchel trying to figure out his lineup, and also indicates how much deeper they are than Leverkusen. But it's also been really good for Leverkusen. And again, I think this is similar to Arsenal. Like Arsenal last season, first half of the season, Arsenal were pretty much as good as Man City, like in the underlying numbers.
Yeah.
And then second half of the season, they were way worse. And okay, part of that was Man City going supernova, but Arsenal also just kind of looked okay. Like top 4 quality over the back half of the season. And it's partially because Arsenal were able to start their first choice 11 a lot. And then the fragility of it, the brittleness of it became more apparent as the season wore on. So I think that there's a slight concern there too, where you say, okay, what happens if like Frimpong gets injured? What happens if Boniface gets injured? What happens if Wirtz gets injured? Like, these are really destabilizing injuries. Whereas at Bayern, it's really only like maybe Kane and Kimmich where you would say, oh my God, this is like a huge problem. And even if Kimmich went down, you think, yeah, Bayern can probably fade that against like the majority of teams in the league. Whereas with Leverkusen, I think if one of these guys gets injured, it's a problem. That I mean, the advantage is it's a shorter league season, but still.
Yeah, I think it obviously is going to be a huge problem if that happens. And when you're a team like Leverkusen trying to go toe-to-toe and keep pace with a team like Bayern, this is always going to be a problem. This isn't a new thing. This isn't a this season thing. This isn't a just because we're playing really well thing. That's always just going to be an issue in terms of a huge club like Bayern. And Leverkusen are a big club, but there's levels here. But even if that does happen, I'm relatively confident that it wouldn't entirely destabilize their season, because I've just had a look at the results. And in terms of like their score lines, since the Bayern game in mid-September, of the 8 league games they've played, they've won them all, but 5 of those 8 they've won by 3 or more goals. So there's a lot of flex there in a couple of these players to cool down. Like, okay, sure, the 2 or 3 one-goal wins they've had in that period might turn into draws, might turn into loss. Sure, that'll happen across the season. But 5 of those 8 games, they've won by 3 or more goals. So, you know, if Boniface, who actually is underperforming, but if he stops scoring, or if, Wirtz's creation numbers take a little bit of a downturn and all of a sudden Boniface's supply and his quality of chances go down, there is flex there each game, at least in terms of how they perform
That's true.
They can still perform worse and score at a lower rate, but still win these games. So I think based on how they're playing, based on how they've been playing and the quality of chances they're creating, there's faith in that one big injury doesn't necessarily completely derail everything. A couple, sure, but they're playing so well as a collective unit that, and also I don't feel that anybody, like, nobody's completely leading this team in terms of goal contributions. There is a shared about in terms of, like, obviously Grimaldo, you mentioned 7 goals, 4 assists in 12 matches from left back. Boniface, 7 goals, 5 assists, obviously a forward. Hoffman, like you said, 10 goal involvements already in 12 matches. That's like the goal involvements are coming from multiple places. It's not like Boniface is scoring 55% of their goals and then everybody else is chipping in with one here and there. And if you kind of like a Villa situation, which we'll come on to, and if you lose Boniface, then you're like, oh shit, where do we get all these goals from? So there is flex there in this team based on how they're playing, that they can go off the boil a bit, they can maybe have an injury, they can just have a couple of bad games or bad patches, and they'll still be fine based on the results so far. So I'm pretty bullish on them.
They've also, you know, I'm looking again at their squad and like, they do have Patrick Schick, they have Nathan Teller, they have Adam Hložek, you know, on the bench as forwards. Like, that's more depth than they've had in the while. At the back, they've got Hinkapié, Tah, Kosunu, and Tapsoba as their defensive. I mean, like, this is, and they've got Stanisic, haven't they? Stanisic on loan from Bayern, which is kind of funny. They could regret that. But like, So maybe they are a little bit deeper than I think, but I mean, I know what you're saying. Like, you don't need to. It's basically going to come down to who makes fewer mistakes against the bad teams in the league. You know, like, you don't need to win every game 3-0 to win the league. You just need to not mess up and draw against like Darmstadt or something.
Sure.
And the other thing is, they could actually be a little bit better than this, because obviously, you know, we touched on it at the beginning and kind of glossed over it, but Stuttgart have better underlying numbers in the sense of, they've better expected goal difference. Their attack is way better. Their defense is a little bit worse than Leverkusen. But Leverkusen have spent the most time in the league winning of anyone. They spent 67% of the time winning. Bayern are at 63. And Leverkusen have spent 1.9% of the time losing.
That's mental. So wait, that would have been literally probably that Bayern game. Yeah.
So
that's mental.
But also, you know, when you're losing, you tend to like rack up the XG. Like Stuttgart, by comparison, have spent 16% of the time losing. Bayern have spent 7% of the time losing. And Stuttgart are kind of 40-40-ish on winning and level, you know, whereas Leverkusen are overwhelmingly ahead.
Yeah.
And so, and when you are ahead and teams are coming out at you, you expect to give up more XG and put up less XG yourself. So it may be actually that if, you know, at kind of level game state, like 0-0 game state, Leverkusen are actually better still than they even look right now. On the other hand, it could be the other way around. It could be the other way around, where teams are pushing out at them and like they're able to get in behind. But generally speaking, when teams are leading a lot, they tend to put up a little bit less XG. So you may also see that this balance between them and Stuttgart starts to get corrected as the season goes on, because Leverkusen are essentially playing a much more manageable style. Like right now, Stuttgart, when they are level, are getting ahead, but they aren't as good at sort of keeping leads. They aren't as good at managing games, whereas Leverkusen are really controlling matches. It's extremely hard to score against them, and their attack can blitz you regardless of game state, I think, because when they're losing, you would expect them to put up a little bit more, like I say. So I don't know, it's a really interesting side. I am intrigued to see where, I wonder if they'll go and like do something in the winter break, just because they've got this opportunity. They do have a little lead. I suppose it probably depends on what the situation is then.
And yeah,
but Bayern are going to think about the Champions League.
That's a very yeah, they do actually. That's a very ice hockey, or it's a very American sports mentality, in that a lot of ice hockey teams, if they think they're in a good position coming into the postseason, and they're like, we could win, they just load up. They just like sell their soul to the devil and do like a load of mad trades and trade off like future draft picks and stuff to be like, we're going to fucking balls to the wall this.
Leverkusen have never won the Bundesliga.
No, like, they never won anything. They've obviously finished second in Champions League as well. Like obviously the whole Leverkusen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, but you expect to hear that, and you expect it, like in the UK when people, you know, do that with like, when they did it with like Arsenal, when Arsenal hadn't won anything under Wenger for ages, it was like Arsenal had won the FA Cup like 9 years previous, been in the Champions League final like 8 years previous, and before that like 10 years previous were invincible.
Mm-hmm.
Like whereas Leverkusen have literally never won the Bundesliga, like they haven't won like a really 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 big trophy. So I think it makes sense that like if you get to winter, you go to every big club that looks like they have some talent, like kind of wasting away on their bench, and you're like,
we'll help them.
What's it going to cost you to like loan us this guy?
Yeah.
Like loan this guy to us, like loan us as much talent. Like I would be going out and I would say like, I would find like a defender who's just sitting on the bench at Chelsea or wherever.
Yeah, Chelsea's the straight one, right?
Yeah, of course. You go there immediately. And clubs like Milan and stuff, like they have guys knocking around as well who are not getting enough minutes. Like I would absolutely be going to all these places and say, give us somebody and we'll just see what we can do, because this is an opportunity to do something really special. And I think as well, you know, it'll be interesting the next 2 weeks, because they've got Dortmund this weekend,
December
on Monday, I think. So that's Sunday. So tomorrow when this comes out. And then they've got Stuttgart the week after. So those games are huge.
And they have midweek games as well. Like, so they're playing Wednesday. They're playing in the Europa League and the DFB Pokal in between those two games as well. So it goes Dortmund, midweek game, Stuttgart away, midweek game.
Interesting.
So it's like, it not only is it a heavy schedule, but it's, those are two huge games, Dortmund at home and then Stuttgart, who have been absolutely flying, like you said, away. Two really difficult games.
They are difficult games. I would be tempted just to like throw the other things. Like, I know you don't want to throw the pork out necessarily because you might win it, but like the Europa League.
I guess
if you're Leverkusen, you do want to win it. But if I were Leverkusen, I'd probably be like, you know what we need to do? We need to get through to like February, March, very close to Bayern.
Yeah.
When the Champions League starts getting serious. Because when the Champions League starts getting serious, we're going to have a huge...
Looking at the group in the Europa League, they're top with 12 points, four from
so
four.
So they can just like
and Carabag or sec Carabag and Mulder are sec or second and third with 6 points. So like okay. they're putting what they need a point to sure. go through top.
Yeah,
in the
so,
next two games.
You know, so from that point of view, I'd be like, right, the kids are playing in these games, so yeah. we just don't care.
Yeah.
Okay. So here you've put in some numbers like Opta have given them a 20% chance of winning the Bundesliga, 66% chance of finishing second. I think that's pretty good.
20% chance of winning the Bundesliga is
yeah.
class.
It's,
like that's punchy.
That's like things that have, as we've said a lot yeah. of the time, like things that have a 20% chance of happening happen constantly.
Yeah.
Like that is not unusual.
For context as well, we're all talking about Arsenal and Liverpool being like kind of title contenders or at least having the ability to push City a long way. Opta have them at 10 and 11% respectively in terms of percentage of winning, probability of winning the Premier League.
Yeah.
So
but...
if we're talking about Liverpool and Arsenal as like genuine title contenders, you've got to consider, you definitely have to consider Leverkusen.
Yeah, though part of that is down to the fact that like, those are there are more title contenders in the Premier League.
Sure.
Like, so Arsenal aren't just competing with Liverpool. They're competing with Liverpool and City and maybe Newcastle as well, like based on the numbers.
But then also, yeah, sure. The quality know, like, is no doubt higher. But all I'm saying is that...
Well, it's just that there are more... Yeah, it just splits the field.
My point was more about how we've come into this section asking, are Leverkusen genuine title contenders?
Yeah, I'm saying
like, absolutely yes, because like you say, things that have 20% chance of probability of happening happen all the time. And like, well, Inter went into the Champions League final against City with a 25% chance of winning. They obviously didn't win, but I thought they were the better team on the night and they could have won that game quite easily. Like that game could have been very different. So obviously this is slightly different. It's not a one-off game. It's they've got another, 26 games to go, 27 games to go, probably. No, less than that.
No. They've done 12, so they've got 22 games.
22
left.
Games to go. Yeah.
It's not that many.
It's not that many. Jesus, that's not that many. But yeah. So
I know, right?
I think they're in a really good position. I think 20% chance of winning the Bundesliga as per Opta, 66% chance of finishing second. Bayern have like an 80% chance of winning the Bundesliga and a 19% chance of finishing second. I think that's, if I was Leverkusen, I'd be looking at those numbers and I'd be like, you know what? We got a chance here. Fair enough. Like, let's swing at this because they're in a great position. They have a, like for the first time in a long time, they have a genuine chance at winning something. For the first time and not finish. Yeah. It does feel like, you know, a team that perpetually finishes second or has historically been plagued with finishing second in their kind of most successful seasons, it does feel like this history will repeat itself in the, like in terms of where we'll be at the end of the season. It does feel like it will be Bayern first, Leverkusen second, which is kind of cruel in many ways, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I agree. Should we move on to Girona?
Yes. For me, this one's pretty open and closed. A lot more open and closed.
Yeah, I was going to say, should we dispense with Girona relatively quickly? Because sure. I just don't see it. Like, I mean, they've been absolutely flying in attack. They've got the second most XG in Spain. And they've scored more goals than any other Spanish side.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, Atleti, I think, have played one game fewer.
Yeah, they played one game fewer.
But their goal difference is better than Barcelona. Not their expected goal difference, their actual goal difference. Obviously, the same points as Real Madrid. But I would say that it's fairly clear where the problem with this team is. And it is in defence. I don't know. Do you want to take it?
I don't really think there's a huge amount to say here because Girona are just absolutely miles out over their skis. They are the most overperforming team in Europe's top five. They've more than 11 points. They're 11 more than 11 points more than they should have. Yes, they've scored the most goals in the league. I think they've scored one more than Real Madrid as of last night, but they've conceded 17, which is almost double Real Madrid's 9. And
that's crazy.
They are really just riding their luck. You know, of their 11 league wins this season, they've come from behind in 6 of them. So over a season, that's just absolutely unsustainable. Like, that's going to catch up with you. If you're constantly conceding or regularly conceding the first goal, you're just making it far more difficult than it needs to be. And then if you dig into the underlying numbers a little bit more, for me, the when I'm looking at things like this in terms of trying to figure out how good a team actually is versus how good they're playing, or how good they're performing or how good the results have been more. XG diff per 90 for me is like the one metric that kind of really is the kind of most important league table to look at. Okay. And Leverkusen, who we just covered, their XG diff is like 1 point something. Like I think it's fifth in Europe, third in the Bundesliga. Really, really good. So yeah, 1.09, same as Man City's. Girona, on the other hand, is plus 0.63, which is pretty good.
It's very good.
It's pretty good.
It really is good.
But it's not like this good. It's not that good in terms of like Real Madrid, top of the La Liga.
I would say it's shockingly close to Real Madrid. Real Madrid are at like plus 0.74. Girona, as of today, are at plus 0.58.
They've dropped.
They've dropped a little bit, yeah.
Sure. But
that is quite close.
I mean,
half of Barca and Atleti, yeah, but still.
It's good, but it's not incredible, right? And
no,
it's
sure.
only good sure. enough for it's only good enough for fifth in La Liga, 18th in Europe. It's less than Marseille, who are currently 12th in Liga. It's less than Chelsea, who are 10th in the Premier League. They're playing well, but their underlying numbers show that they're not playing quite as well as their results would indicate, and they're consistently going behind and they're conceding too many goals. This, for me, is a really good purple patch that will come to an end at some point, and they will... I think they'll finish in a really good position. I think they've got a really good chance of actually finishing Champions League. And I think actually the probability meters we've spoken about, I think they've indicated that their most probable finish is fourth, which for a squad like Girona, who only got promoted again two seasons ago, finished 10th last year, that will be an incredible couple of seasons to go promoted 10th, 4th, or even 5th, even if you finish Europa League spots. That's an incredible season. But are they genuine title contenders? Are they going to stay and keep weight or keep pace and go punch for punch, point for point with Madrid? No chance.
Yeah, I mean...
Also, we haven't even gotten to their squad yet.
Yeah, though, I mean, look, there was a period where their squad was quite strong because obviously they have that relationship with Man City. So, like, they're owned by the same people, right?
Yeah, it's the City group. Yeah.
City Football Group. And right now, they do have some... They have Eric Garcia there. They have somebody else. They have Alex Garcia there as well.
Alex Garcia,
yeah. Who was also there. They've also got Dali Blind, which is fun. And then they've got this guy, Artem Dovbyk, from Dnipro, who they got in the summer, who has got 7 goals, 4 assists in 8 90s. He's got a goal involvement every 65 minutes. I'm so glad you put that in. That's absolutely bananas.
It's absolutely outrageous, which again, unsustainable, though, right?
Sure. But this is the whole thing. Like, I mean, his numbers are still very good. So it's exactly the same story as the club generally. It's like, is it sustainable? No. But are they good? Yes. Sure. And they were in the fifth tier, like under 25 years ago. Yeah. You know, in a quarter of a century, they could go to Champions League football. That is bananas. And they should just enjoy it. You know, like, have you seen their average attendance this season?
I thought it's like 10,000, isn't it?
I think it's 12. I think it's 12. Probably they've added some. People are like, holy shit, we're top of the league.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, they should just enjoy it. But they've definitely got... The Opta's odds, the finish they predict for them, you know, with the highest probability is fourth.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because, like, they're basically as good as Athletic Club. Mm-hmm. And they're ahead of Athletic Club currently. So if you can maintain that, that's great. Now, if they ended up finishing ahead of any of Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and Barcelona, I would be extremely surprised.
Sure.
And Sociedad as well. Because Sociedad's defense, especially lately, is just like fucking
flawed. I think as good as they've been, and as highly, and like you said, their most likely finish is fourth in terms of the predictions. But I can very easily see all of Barca, Madrid, Atleti, Sociedad, and Bilbao finishing above them.
Yeah.
I can see that quite comfortably happening. And even if that happens, that would still put them at what, fifth, sixth?
It would be. Yeah, and I don't think that they're going to get that fifth spot, are they, this year?
Yeah,
the Champions League. Yeah. So I don't know. But they're certainly in the hunt. I just think no, basically, is the answer. Like, how seriously do we take them for the title? Not at all, really. I would love to see it, but it would be like... It actually would be quite similar to Leicester winning it, to be honest, it would be quite similar. But Leicester had a few players there where you were like, oh, this guy who they got for nothing is actually a superstar. Yeah. And they turned out to be superstars. Whereas they don't really have that. Like, they have, you know, they have like Miguel Gutierrez, like they have interesting players, but like, it's not like Alex Garcia is a known quantity. We know that Alex Garcia is not a superstar. We know he's pretty good, but
he was also in Romania 2 seasons ago.
Like, sure, but I think that was ridiculous. I like Alex Garcia. Yeah. But it's not like he's not a 22-year-old who you're just like, whoa, like they just managed to pick this guy up from the third division of France or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the answer here is not happening.
No. It'll be great though.
I would love to see it. I mean, I don't really want success for the City Football Group, but
But also, I think overall they just need to pump the brakes a little bit or look at and I'm sure they probably are in terms of internally in the club, but looking at that success in contextualizing that success, like you said, less than 25 years ago, fifth tier to what will probably be at worst European football, at worst Europa League, incredible.
Yeah,
in less than 25 years.
I would just be like big Andring it. I would be like just like, this is amazing. Enjoy it. You know, like don't think about tomorrow. Just have fun, boys. Just go out there. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what I want it to be. But I think that's fine because, like, look, let's face it. If they had a pitch invasion, like, no one would notice. So, it doesn't really matter if their fans get pissed off. Like,
yeah,
it's like the team could take the fans, I think. Should we move on to Aston Villa? Because Aston Villa are absolutely the opposite end of that. Like, if there's one team whose fans are always, like, really giving it the big one when maybe they shouldn't be, it's Aston Villa. But this is kind of something that we said last season. So, last season, when we covered Villa, we, and especially I, said they're not as good as they look currently, but they can go and improve in the summer. They can go and get some pieces, and then they have the opportunity to make this level that they currently look like they are at their actual level. They can make it sustainable by adding the right pieces. And they went and they added some really smart pieces. Like, they had a really good summer. They brought in Pau Torres, they got in Tielemans, they got in Diaby, which obviously was like an absolutely insane signing. They've just kind of strengthened all around the squad. And we kind of talked about this topic before the Spurs game or before I saw the result of the Spurs game. Mm-hmm. But now, obviously, they're in fourth. They're a point off City. They're 2 points off top, which is actually bananas when you think about it. And they and Liverpool are the only teams in the league with a perfect home record. They've got 6 wins from 6. In those 6 games at home, they've scored 23. So they've scored nearly 4 goals a game at home and they've conceded 5. I mean, that is just like absolutely astonishing form. And they've already gone away to Liverpool, Newcastle, Chelsea, Spurs. The attack, they're only 5th by XG, but only City have scored more actual goals. And I mean, it's not like I think, oh, this is going to come crashing back to earth. Like, the attack is good. The attack is good. What's your take on them?
So for me, my take on them is that they, like you said, they are good. They are just out and out, they're a good team. They're a team that has been good for, like, decent for a couple of seasons now, but really kind of kicked on this season. And you watch them play and a lot of it just makes sense. They are a good attacking side. They're not incredible. They're not like City levels, but they are like genuine Champions League, probably European football level quality attack. They're very good. My concern is how brittle they might be and how that might be a house of cards, because I'm sure we'll come on to this in a second, but I'm not sure how good they are if you remove an Ollie Watkins. Or we can get onto you now, sure. But so my biggest concern for them is two things. Defensively, they're kind of middling. Yeah. And attacking wise, while they're great, it could all come tumbling down if they lose Ollie Watkins, or if Ollie Watkins goes a bit cold, or whatever permutation that means that Ollie Watkins isn't scoring at the rate, isn't finishing the chances at the rate he is currently. And then all of a sudden I look at that team and I'm like, okay, where are your goals coming from if they're not coming from Watkins? How are you going to win games if you don't have that output from Watkins and your defence is still a middling defence kind of as it is now? Those are my main concerns with Villa. And there's no reason to say that either of those will happen. But for me, you know, like with Leverkusen, like I said, I don't see one injury causing them that much of a problem. I can see one injury causing Villa a fucking huge problem.
Yeah. I mean, he's their top scorer and top assister.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it is basically as simple as that. And that does worry me a bit. I mean, like, his numbers are just, like, really through the roof right now. Like, he's at, as I said before, he's at 0.83 expected goals and assists per 90. He's only attempting just over 3 shots, which is kind of unusual.
Very low.
You know, it's, like, relatively low for a guy who's scoring as much as he is. And I think you're right. Like, after him, when it comes to goals, you're then looking at Douglas Luiz. Douglas Luiz has scored 5, and 3 of those were penalties.
Yeah.
So that is a bit of a worry. Because I just don't know.
It's a one-man show currently.
It is a one-man show. And also, that's quite a lot of penalties. Like, I mean...
Did you say 3?
If you've had 3 in what is it, 12 games? 12 games, something like
13
that.
Games.
Yeah, then you're kind of like looking at about 9 to 10 over the course of a season. Is that a lot? I don't know.
Like, I mean, I think United feels got 11. Like quite a bit. I think United got 10 or 11 in that season where everyone was like, oh, you get a penalty every week. And we kind of did.
Okay.
It is a lot of pens. 11 pens in a season, 10 pens in a season, in the league.
So that would be kind of a lot. Like, fair enough.
One every 3 games.
I don't know, man. Like... I'm trying to avoid getting straight into like my issues here.
Sure.
Okay. 9 would be last season. City had 10 penalties. Fulham had 9. Those were 1 and 2. So it would be like 1 or 2 in the league if they had that many pens. Okay. Fair enough. Okay. So I think let's just get straight into it because we're talking about how seriously we take them. I find interesting that by expected goal difference, they're about 6th in the league, you know? And it's mostly attack, like you say. Mm-hmm. They're pretty clear of 7th, which is Brentford, but they're a little bit behind 5th, though 5th is Chelsea. And Chelsea are 12 points back. Mm-hmm. So if the current performance levels persist, which is a big question, but if that happens, then you would probably still expect Villa to finish higher because 12 points is such a huge gap that Chelsea would need to be a lot better than them.
Or Villa would need to be a lot worse. To make up.
Yeah. Exactly. Or, you know, both a bit.
Sure.
Newcastle, I think, slightly different case because Newcastle are only 5 points back and Newcastle are just way better than Villa. Like, they're at plus 0.9 expected goal difference per 90 to Villa's plus 0.5. Spurs, really difficult to say because their numbers were great a couple of weeks ago. Then they got battered by Chelsea. Then they got battered by Wolves. You know, I mean, like, on the XG, that game was an absolute bloodbath. Then they've lost to Villa.
Yeah, I actually just saw that. It was like 2.5 to not 0.4 or something.
Yeah, it was crazy. They were so bad in that game after going ahead. But they're only 2 points behind Villa. And at the same time, you know, when their players come back fit, they've basically just got to limp through until their players are fit. Yeah.
Yeah. They have a full team of players injured currently, like decent players.
They've got a load of injuries. So do Newcastle. Newcastle. They've got a ton of injuries. And if those players come back and they're still in touch, then you'd think this is now an interesting question. What have you just picked up, Pete? I just saw a little face of amusement/shame.
Well, it's actually not even, it's not fancy. I'm actually quite ashamed of it, but it's a liter bottle of Bombay Sapphire. It was the best and most affordable option of gin that Tesco Express at the end of my road had the offer. There was a Lakes gin, but it was 40 quid and this was on Tesco club card for 18 pounds.
Damn.
So I'm going to have a Bombay Sapphire because we've run out of gin, unfortunately, which has never
run out of gin.
Never happened.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, how is it possible that you've been reduced to like a gin run to the supermarket?
Mm. And for Bombay Sapphire, nonetheless, like we've spoken at length about how gin is only as good as its like its component parts. So a Gordon's and Schweppes is a shit. It's not worth drinking. But
sure,
it's like a Hendrix and Fevertree. Much, much better. A Monkey 47 Delicious. And Fever Tree. Love a bathtub as well. Like a navy strength bathtub. Big fan of them. We've digressed into gin chat. We usually save this for the After Dark episode.
No, I like it. I think it's good to get into it. Like, I forgot to get a drink, but I might get one in between. But I may have to go out and push a car in between episodes, so we'll see. Yeah, I don't know. So anyway.
Also, that's not Villa a euphemism, by the way. That you mean literally push a car.
I have to, like, push a car, yeah. So Villa are very good, but they're not like that much better than the contenders. They've got a points advantage on them, but like not that big an advantage on Spurs, not that big an advantage on Newcastle, a huge advantage on Chelsea. But like, there are a lot of people in this race.
Mm. I think that's the problem with the Premier League this year. It's real hard to predict because there's like genuinely eight teams that are vying for four spots.
And there are so many crap teams that, and also, it's quite easy for the good teams to just be like, okay, well, this is basically like a nailed on three
points. I also kind of feel like, I said that it's eight teams vying for four spots, but it kind of feels like it's five teams vying for one spot. Because for me, those top three spots, at least the top two spots, are kind of going to go City, Arsenal, Liverpool. Like, I think...
Okay. Certainly, I think that's a really big part of it.
Two of those spots, minimum, probably three, but definitely two of those spots will be taken by two of City and then either Arsenal or Liverpool, depending on how the season finish. And that completely changes the complexion of the task at hand, because all of a sudden you've got one, maybe two spots for teams to finish in the Champions League, and you've got a ton of teams that are absolutely capable of finishing there.
Yeah, because if there are four spots, then you're like, well, there's so much competition that I don't know if I give Villa a particularly good chance of making it, because I do think they're thinner than other teams. I think Newcastle can afford to just go out in January and just solve some of their problems. You know, they are trying to pretend as if they're like bound by financial fair play in Newcastle, but it does just basically seem like the path has been cleared for them to sign Ruben Neves in January. Like they can just do shit like that. And Spurs, I don't think, have that much money.
Also,
but Spurs are
going
to get players back, and like, they can get some stuff.
Like, they don't even need to put a ton of money into that. They can literally loan them.
Exactly. And like, they've got the Saudi League there. Like, they probably can just like take six guys out of the Saudi League. But Villa have some money, but they do spend a lot. Okay, but here, I have a few issues with Villa. Okay, so one, the defence. It's not terrible, but it's ninth in the league. And that is all based on chance quality, because they give up the third fewest shots in the league after Arsenal and City, but the quality of shots is the third highest. So you get really big chances. And actually, I watched kind of like the first 15, 20 minutes of the Spurs-Villa game, and literally Spurs were through like one-on-one all the time. And a bunch of those were offside, but it was one of those ones, you know, where you watch it back and you're like, that's not offside because Villa played a great offside trap.
It's
that's offside because... Yeah, somebody just mistimed their run a little bit.
Yeah.
That is a bit of a concern. Like, they could have been 3-0 down in that game early on and just out of sight. And I also think that teams might adapt to them. So I think that this is kind of more on the attacking side. I still think their attack is going to be good because they've got enough talent. But Scott Willis on Twitter like published this graph, which shows the average height of the defensive line that Premier League teams face. So how deep do teams sit when they play against you? So Arsenal face the deepest defences in the league, then Man City, then Man United, then Liverpool. You know, like, it's kind of a lot of reputational stuff as well as quality stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Villa are, like, there are 12 teams who face a deeper defensive line than Villa do.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, Villa do have a lot of space to run in behind. Like, teams are perfectly happy to push up against them. They're not going to carry on doing that if Ollie Watkins is on like 15 goals in January. They'll be like, let's just
and if they're scoring 25 goals in however many games at home.
Exactly. People are going to be like, well, we're going to go away to Villa Park and we're going to bunker and counter. Yeah. We're not going to like just let them run in behind us.
Yeah,
we're not fucking idiots. So I think that might make a difference. And I think that's particularly interesting with Watkins because, as we said before, only three shots a game. His shot quality is bananas. He's at 0.2 non-penalty expected goals per shot. And Haaland is at like 0.22.
Yeah.
His 0.2 is the same as Haaland last season.
Mm-hmm.
So if teams sit a bit deeper and that shot quality goes down even just a little bit, then that is a big hole in Aston Villa's attack. Because even if shot quality comes
shots,
down to...
Essentially.
Yeah, because it's not like he's getting loads and loads of shots, so it doesn't matter. He's getting relatively few shots that are super high quality, and nobody else is scoring goals.
Mm.
So if Watkins sees a reduction in his XG, then Villa overall are going to have a problem. That's another part of it. Another part of it is the away-home split. So the home form, amazing. Away, maybe a question mark. Because they're the second best team in the league at home by expected goal difference. Only Liverpool are ahead of them. But away, they're 10th. They're actually a negative expected goal difference away from home side. And that's partially down to that Newcastle battering. but they also got 7 points against Chelsea, Wolves and Spurs, which were all basically level on XG. Yeah. They got 7 points from those games. So it's okay not to be good away from home if you're amazing at home, but it is quite unusual for a really good side to have that level of disparity. Like, if you're a really good side, you tend to be really good at home and, like, pretty good away.
Pretty good away. Sure.
Whereas Villa are amazing at home and dog shit away, which is not...
Yeah, it's very strange, isn't it?
It's not the most sustainable, in my view.
Well, it's definitely not sustainable, but it's also just interesting as to what would be the causation of that. Like, why... Because it's not like they're playing...
They've had tough away games.
But, yeah, I mean...
Liverpool, Newcastle, Spurs, you know, like, these are tough away games. Chelsea.
Yeah. I mean, could it be as simple as that? That they've literally just had a tough run away from home?
Maybe, but like, they are still a negative expected goal difference side.
For that big a swing? I think that can account for maybe a decent part of that swing.
Yeah.
But it is also kind of concerning... Yeah, just that disparity between home form and away form, even if you kind of... I'd be interested to see the statistics if you kind of did it, if you leveled off, made it, like, played at scratch, in that you leveled off the statistics based on quality of opposition.
Well, like, here's an example. Like, Newcastle, for example, are plus 1.37 expected goal difference per 90 at home. Crazy.
That's good.
Away from home, they're plus 0.39. So they're still good.
Yeah.
Liverpool at home are plus 1.74, away from home, plus 0.12, which is actually shit. Like that's quite surprised by that. But they're still a plus side. Whereas Villa's away form is between Crystal Palace and West Ham, which doesn't scream to me like top four. No. Now, obviously,
especially
it can improve.
Based on how competitive it is to get that fourth spot.
It can improve, but home form is also probably not going to be like, you know, 3 points every game forever. Like, eventually, eventually City or something are going to go to Villa Park and fucking beat you. So, I mean, there are issues there. But, I mean, it doesn't scare me or anything. It's just like a thing to think about, is what I'd say. And then the last part of it, of course, is the strength of the squad. Like, whenever you're up against like Arsenal and Liverpool, teams like that, and you're Villa, you are going to be thinner than them. Like, it's just how it is.
Yeah.
But I think obviously Watkins going down would be a major, major issue. They probably okay in midfield, but I would not want to like lose Diaby for the season, for example. On the other hand, they've got Buendia to come back. You know, like they've got stuff there. I think overall they're very good candidates for Champions League. Because Spurs have these injury issues that are going to last a while, and I also thought Spurs' good form was a little bit unsustainable, because Newcastle are a little bit back of them right now, because Chelsea have just like not picked up points at any decent rate, because Man United are up there in the hunt while being absolutely crap.
Dog shit.
I just think that it's not really like... There's nobody who I'm like, that is the team who will definitely come and take this spot.
Yeah.
Maybe Newcastle. But if there's a fifth spot, it doesn't matter. And
but also, even Newcastle, I think, is a bit of a stretch to be that dominant and stretch away from all of the other teams, like, kind of snapping at their heels.
Yeah, but then if Newcastle go out of the Champions League, like, in the next couple of weeks, then Newcastle will be like...
Yeah, that penalty last night was a killer for them.
Yeah, and if they go out, like, Villa want them to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. But then also, I think Newcastle will still be invested in domestic cups as well, because they're like, we could actually fucking win something.
Yeah, they do need to win something, to be honest. Yeah. Like, I think they just, like, look, like, this team is so good.
Yeah.
I think they just need to win something early on to, like,
solidify
to keep
their
things
kind of,
going.
Yeah, their stature.
Like, it's good for teams like, it's good for, like, Arsenal that they got an FA Cup in their first season. Mm-hmm. And while I know they haven't kicked on, like, it's good that, like, Ten Hag won some stuff. Like, I think that in the long run, if you start to like build something, you can say it's not like, oh, we're competing for our first trophy and we've been doing this for 5 years. Like, I think it helps to have it under your belt already.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I think that I'd probably give them a 25% chance for top four if there are four spots. If there are five spots, I give them a much higher chance, like 50%, maybe more.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like, 25%, I think, is pretty good.
So for me,
because it is basically one spot.
It is, yeah, no, I was just about to say that it literally is one spot, because especially if we're talking about Villa, Actually, it doesn't actually really matter who else we're talking about outside of the top three. But for me, that top three is kind of nailed on, wrapped up. It's going to be some permutation of City, Arsenal, Liverpool. There's probably only going to be
That would be my guess, yeah.
One spot left. In what instances are five slots?
I think it's all just like differential at the end of the season or something. I don't know.
Basically one slot left. Are Villa better across an entire season than all of Newcastle, Spurs, United? It's tough. They could easily finish fourth, but they could also finish sixth, and they could kind of not do that much different. You know, things could go as they're going now, and they could still finish sixth in terms of like how they're playing. It's that competitive. It's that tight. You know, for me, if I was Villa, I'd be concerned. One, like you said, if Newcastle come out of the Champions League and have a lot less to play for at least midweek. Two, United are only a handful of points back from top, having played fucking horrible football like all season, basically. So if United suddenly find a gear that works or find a bit of form that works, all of a sudden Villa could find themselves just slowly but surely falling behind. Like, it looks good now, but I think there are a lot of things down the line that can happen. There are a lot of things that can change. And if I was to put money on it, like, would I bet Newcastle or United, or we haven't even talked about Spurs as well. Would I put money on them finishing above, at least one of them finishing above Villa? I probably would.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, that's why it's like, you know,
that's kind of what it comes down to.
25.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
sure.
Why the odds are more against it than on it, I guess. But yeah. I mean, it just feels like somebody in there will accelerate.
And like, so they absolutely are contenders, but I just don't think they have the depth or the quality throughout their squad and throughout their kind of bench and backups to, when one of those teams inevitably raises up, one of the bigger teams with the bigger squads, more money and kind of more a greater arsenal, I suppose, of players, once they raise up, whoever that might be, I think Villa will struggle to kind of keep pace. And I think that's when the lines will be drawn in the sand and things will kind of start to shake out and even out. Doesn't mean that Villa can't do it, but I wouldn't put money on it personally. But they're contenders for sure.
Okay, that brings us on to the burn book. And this week, should we start with positive, negative in our...
I'm happy to start with negative.
You want to go negative?
Can I go negative? Can I go first?
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah.
Right. So I'm coming in hot with this because this is one from today. Well, it's one from my life in general. It's actually kind of been on the list for a while in a different variation, same top, similar vibe, just a different kind of iteration of it. But from today, the thing I'm putting into the burn book is organized fun. Atrocious. When and how to have fun. Don't force me into a formatted structure of fun. If this social scenario is so limp and flaccid that you need to codify a structure within it in order for everybody to have fun, I'm not going to be there. So today, this sounds so harsh if anybody from work says it.
That's excellent.
Basically, the end of our work lunch would have ended in Laser Quest. And to be honest, I'm kind of fine with it. If I had a few more drinks, I wouldn't have really cared that much. But obviously, I couldn't do it because of this. We were recording this podcast. And logistics-wise, I couldn't have made it back in time. I probably could have, but it would have been overly stressed. It would have been more stress than I was willing to give up for a session of Laser Quest with my... with my colleagues, but I would have been fine to do it. However, the bigger problem I have with it is that when you say that you're not involved in it or you don't wish to be involved in the organized fun, the fallout that happens from the people who are involved in it, like the reaction I always get is like as if they've just like kicked their fucking toddler in the face, or as if I am not necessarily the most horrible person in the world, but like they can't believe that I don't want to take part in the organized fun and that, you know, I'm just being boring and shit. It's like, well, no, in my opinion, I'm not going to have fun doing this. Therefore, I'm not going to do it. The only instance where I will do it is if it's like integral for me to do it. If everybody else is fun in terms of if you need 10 people and you can't have any more or any less, and I am the 10th person, and me dropping out would mean that nobody gets to do it, sure, yeah, I'll do it then. But if me dropping out, I'm just doing something else while you do that and have fun, if that has no bearing or no influence on all the other people's fun, I'm absolutely fine with that. And you should be fine with that too. Stop yes. being a little fun terrorist. Stop trying to make me have fun, even though I know that I won't have fun. I'm telling you from years of experience that I will not enjoy this. Why can't you just take that for the credit and the merit that it's worth and just let me like live my own little life? The idea that pisses me off the most is that they're like, oh, no, but I want you to come because it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun for you. Sure. Like, I accept that. But I'm telling you, I won't enjoy it. So either you're saying that you want to force me to not have fun to amplify your fun, very selfish, or you're just not listening to anything I'm saying. Either way, just let me not take part, and then I'll join you at the pub afterwards. Or I'll go to the pub first and stay there, and then you can join me. Or whatever whatever eventuality afterwards. Same thing goes for board games at Christmas, or board games ever. Like, I don't really like board games. When a family gets out a board game or whatever, and you're like, I don't want to play, and then you're just constantly pressured into playing, and you're like, guys, you can play without me, and I'm fine with that. You just need to be fine with that. This is your problem. This is a you issue, not a me issue. I'm fine with you playing without me.
Why are some people like so like concerned? It's like they feel they're going to be observed or something if you're not participating. They're like, oh, it'll be weird if you're kind of watching. It's not enough for me to be having fun. I need everybody else to be having fun. Yeah. And I need them to be having fun of exactly the kind that I've dictated.
Exactly. Like, they can't accept
that
fun can come from different avenues. Me not taking part, to me, is more fun than taking part in these instances. Therefore, just let me do me. You can also do
I think
you.
It's part of a bigger issue as well, like, which is that there are a lot of people who think that they know what being fun means. Mm. You know, so like the same way that if you say Lied anything that someone finds, yes. if you find say anything that someone finds funny is shit, the default response in this stupid country is like, oh, you must be fun at parties. And you're like, my performance at parties isn't really related to whether I find this one shit joke funny.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I would not be fun at your party because I'd think that everyone there was a cunt. But like,
I wouldn't be there either. I wouldn't turn up.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm like perfectly fun at like a party with people I like because they're not twats and I'm having a good time. Like, it's that kind of thing where it's just like, enjoy things the way I enjoy them or you suck. Yeah. And you think...
And there's zero in between either.
It's just different people, bro.
It's like you're either miserable and hate everything, which for me, I get why people might say that. But
sure.
There's zero in between. Up until that, you then need to be like the biggest, most animated, loudest person in the room playing Laser Quest, and that's how we—that's how we measure how fun it is.
Yeah, it's a little bit like at uni. I remember at uni, like first year, like everyone goes out all the time, and then you know by kind of year three, year four, there's like a crew who still go out like every Tuesday, every Wednesday, like have an absolutely colossal night and are really hardcore about it. And those people, I remember, were really like, we are the most fun because we do this every week. And I was like, you are fucking boring because you're not just like willing to hang out with friends. Like, you basically don't feel that you can be fun unless you have a huge activity to keep you busy. Whereas I can go for dinner with a friend, like go to drinks with friends, like go out, like do nothing, like watch a film and still like have a good time with my friends because my friends are fun.
Yeah.
Like that, and that kind of thing, I think, like, continues as time goes on. Like, there are people who think that they are more fun because they are into X or Y thing. And you're kind of like, no, you're just into like a sort of obvious, kind of childish form of fun that just doesn't work for me. Like, no, thank you.
No time for
no
it.
No, thank you.
No time.
I agree. Organized fun is bullshit. Like, it's like the first step on the path to fascism.
No, I'm fine with organized fun existing.
What is fascism if not organized fun?
I'm fine. Yeah, sure. I'm fine with organized fun existing. I suppose my problem lies more in the fact that the lack of acceptance of me removing myself from said fun.
But isn't organized fun like of necessity always?
What, like
slightly
everybody
an imposition?
Yes. Everybody must comply. Everybody must take part.
Yeah, because it starts with like.
Very
it's always like, oh, okay, well, we're going to this thing and like you can do bowling there or whatever. And then it's like, oh, I've booked a table, so now everyone owes me a tenner, you know. And then you're like, well, I don't want to do fucking bowling. And then it's just like, no, well, we've all got to chip in. And you're like, okay, well, I'll chip in. Like,
I would pay 10 points
to not. Then you arrive and then you're just like, what the fuck am I doing here?
I would pay more to not do it, honestly. The Football Daily leaving drinks was actually the perfect scenario because it was...
Where you did nothing.
I did nothing. I just drank Guinness, but I had a good time because I drank Guinness and spoke to people. But other people took part in lots of activities like shuffleboard and darts and beer pong. And I just didn't do any of that. But I did beer pong. Yeah, yeah. I mean, beer pong's like probably like the lowest access one.
Yeah, because every 5 minutes someone would hand me a ball, yeah, and be like, it's your turn, and I'd just throw it. And be like, right, I'm done.
Walk away. Whereas like there were people I didn't speak to all night because they were like constantly playing like darts or something. They were like in the middle of some like elimination game. I can't remember what it's called.
It's not really appropriate for a wake as well, is it? Which is what it was, really. Over the corpse of FD, everyone was just...
In that instance, everybody had their own... the agency within themselves to choose how much or how little they wished to partake in games.
There was
no pressure. There was no outside pressure being like, everybody must play fucking bowling now. Or everybody, we've all paid for everybody to play the mini golf. Fuck off. Go do it yourself. I'll pay you and not do it.
I'll pay you to fuck off. That is how I feel. Yeah, I agree. All right, what am I putting in? I had a couple here, but I'm going to go for this one. Leaf blowers. So now I live in like Southwest London and it's full of posh Tory twat. I don't really know a way to say it. But they're the kind of people who are just like, oh God, leaves. Got to blow up all the leaves, you know? And they get out their leaf blowers. And I read a Twitter thread about this the other day, and I was just like, this has finally encapsulated like what I hate about these, and in a much more articulate way than I could, which was from like a kind of gardener saying like, leaf blowers are fucking stupid. And they are fucking stupid, but I think they're stupid in kind of two ways. So in one sense, they're incredibly environmentally unfriendly. So you run them, there are electric ones, but they are like not that effective, so people get the petrol ones. They literally run on petrol.
Are they petrol? So, I always thought they were.
So
electric.
the leaves fall off your tree, and then you blow them into a pile using petrol, and then you scoop them up into a bag which is made of plastic, and then that bag goes with your rubbish to landfill and gets added to landfill. Whereas what normally happens when leaves are on the ground is they decompose and they enrich the soil. Mm-hmm. So what actually happens when you do this as well is you end up with an impoverished soil, like a soil which has fewer nutrients, where things don't grow as well. And it's because the leaves, which are meant to fall on the soil and decompose, were taken away and instead have just been added to the massive amount of shit that we throw away every year. And in the process, we've used a bunch of like petrochemicals because we've used a plastic which is made using, you know, fossil fuels, and we've like blown them into a pile using like a fucking like diesel engine. So that's one part of it. That's a main part of it. But it's also that I just think I can't understand the mindset of people who are like, these leaves that have fallen off a tree look unsightly. It's like, I have to blow them into a pile. I don't get it. Like, I just think this mindset of like everything needs to be neat and tidy, it's one of the things I hate most about this country, because I think this country is such a neat and tidy country. Like, there's no fucking countryside here. There's just like, or rather, there's no like actual wilderness here. It's all just like manicured countryside. It's all like domesticated.
It's like that show home culture where people try to make their houses look as if nobody's ever lived in them.
Yes. And I just think, what is the aim of this? Like, I was having a similar conversation with a friend the other day where like she was talking about, I don't know, there was some like dispute or whatever, and she said, like, as if like kind of taking it as read, like something about using coasters on like an expensive table. And I was like, I get that a lot of people are into coasters, but tables were invented to put stuff on. And then the idea that people put a tiny little mini table on top of their table to put stuff on, and we call it a coaster, that is fucking stupid. The table is meant for you to put stuff on it. And just don't get like a heavily varnished table that like is going to melt if anyone puts anything warm on it. I do not understand this at all. Like, just have a rougher table that is designed to hold things. It absolutely infuriates me. And so I do just think that there are some people who make a fetish of neatness and niceness. And I think the leaf blower is like a perfect encapsulation of that, in my view. Okay, rant over. What are you taking out of the burn book? What are you positive about this week?
What I'm positive about this week, I'm actually moving stuff on my desk right now. I'm not sure if you can see it. I'm moving it so I can show you what it is.
Oh, okay.
Which isn't very good for an audio podcast, but it's good for at least you. I'm pleased about that. But what I'm taking out of the burn book, I always confuse myself with in and out of this of this fucking format. Yeah, what I'm taking out of the burn book this week is the PlayStation Portal. Now, I mentioned this
PlayStation Portal.
I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. This is the new streaming device of
the
Switch like PlayStation device, which is kind of like a Switch, but it's also there's nothing locally housed on it. So it's just pretty much connects to your PlayStation and then streams it via remote play, which is technology that has existed for ages. It's just never been that great. Like, you can do it through your laptop, you can do it through your phone. There's a device called Backbone, which kind of like clips around your phone and turns your phone into like a gamepad thing. Like, it's in the same way with Switch, you've got like the controls on either side, left and right, and then a screen in the middle, but the screen is your phone. And that's existed for a while, but they've just never been that good. And there's always been like lag input, and there's just been issues with the performance and the enjoyment of it. It's worked, but it's not worked that well. Whereas this device has just been released by PlayStation, and a lot of people are like kind of slamming it, being like, who is this for? Like, what is the point of buying this? And I get that. But I feel like I'm one of the smaller number, I suppose, of PlayStation users that could actually benefit from this. So basically, I feel that this will revolutionize how I play the PlayStation.
Okay.
Because one, the experience of it is great. Like, there is virtually zero lag on it, which is quite incredible. Like, they've mastered, there is a little bit of lag at points, but I think that's kind of more down to my internet not being as fast as it could be. And we're actually in the process of changing providers, and I should actually get much, much faster internet. But also, internet speeds are only going to get quicker. I was sitting in Bordeaux Airport last summer, and I went on 5G, and the 5G in Bordeaux Airport was 5 times faster than my internet. And my internet took 100 meg a second. So I don't have slow internet.
Yeah.
But the way the world is going, the way data transfer is going, both internet and 5G, etc., it's only going to get faster. So that's only going to get better and more stable. And it's already miles better than the version that existed before out with the device. And it's just meant that I've been able to, like, I sat in bed on, like, I don't know, like a Thursday night at 11 o'clock being like, instead of turning on TV, I'm going to just play the PlayStation. But I don't need to go into my office, turn on the PlayStation, and sit in front of the big monitor. I can just like lie in bed, play for like 35 minutes, just do a bit, whatever, and then just like leave it and go to sleep. Or I can do it from downstairs in the living room, which means that I can kind of play PlayStation, but also still have some form of like conversation with Jess. I'm not in the office on my own, locked away for like two hours. Like, we can put a TV show on in the background that we don't necessarily need to pay that much attention to. I can play the PlayStation sitting beside her, and we can still have a similar evening to what we would do if we were just watching like a random show.
No, so
it's changed that a lot. And also then traveling. I haven't even traveled with it yet, but I can go home for Christmas. And still, if, you know, I have time to spare at home, I can be like, I can just fire up.
How does that work? What, you just need Wi-Fi?
You just need Wi-Fi. What I find performance-wise, if you can wire Ethernet your PlayStation, like the home device, it makes it way better.
Now, yeah, that makes sense.
Our modem is downstairs and I'm upstairs, but I've got the kind of... They look like range extenders, but what it does is you plug it in to your electrics and it sends the Ethernet. It essentially extends your Ethernet from your modem directly to wherever the other one's plugged in through your electric cables.
Okay.
No idea how it does it. No idea what the science behind it, but essentially it means that you can wire devices in via Ethernet that aren't actually right beside the modem. So initially when I started using it, I was like, this is kind of shit. It's quite laggy. It's not great. And then I read online, like, everyone was like, you need to Ethernet connection your PlayStation. It makes it just more stable. Even though when I ran the test, my Ethernet connection through that device was like a fifth of the speed of my Wi-Fi. Again, don't understand why, but again, I assume it's just more stable, or it's not relying on the same like bandwidth from that the streaming device is using. And then pretty much all it does is it you need to leave your PlayStation in rest mode, and through the Wi-Fi, the streaming device tells your PlayStation to wake up, and then it just streams what is on that PlayStation to your device. So if I was like streaming it in one room, and I turned on the monitor that's plugged into my PlayStation, that would come up as well. Like you would see me playing it downstairs. Like you would be able to watch it. So it pretty much just remote controls your PlayStation from anywhere in the world. And it's for me, it's a game changer. It makes it far more accessible. For whatever reason, and I don't know if this makes sense or not, and I don't think it does really make sense, but in my head it makes sense. Me turning this little device on for like an hour when I'm sitting in bed feels like less of a an imposition or a, you know, draining activity than going into my office and sitting in front of the screen. And I don't know why.
No, that makes perfect sense to me.
Essentially, it's the exact same thing, but I don't know why.
It's like being on your phone. It's like being on your phone. Like, it's like,
it's no, more accessible.
I completely agree because I'm using the Switch. And like, obviously the Switch, it was like a week until I actually used the Switch on the TV before I even set up the TV thing. And when I sit there, I'm in the room. I've got the Switch there and the TV's there. To do it all on the TV, even though it literally takes the same time to boot it up as it does, like, just in my hand.
It just feels so different.
I just want to do it in my hand. It's just, like, faster.
Yeah.
And then you're right that I'll sit in bed and where, you know, I can sit alongside Emma and we can, like, have a conversation and I can relax and I can just, like, play a bit on the Switch before bed.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, it's basically as well, I do think, I'm sure you had this feeling, but like when I was a kid, I was like, this is what I want handheld gaming to be. Even then I was impatient that I was like, I like Game Boys and stuff, but like you just cannot, the experience is nothing like a real console.
Mm-hmm.
Now the graphics for a lot of stuff on the Switch, it's not like sensational, you know, because it's like relatively limited hardware compared to like other consoles.
Yeah. Like,
but that portability of it, that total portability of it, is just like amazing.
So with this PlayStation 1, you still get, it's like a 1080p screen. I think it's 8 inches. But you still get the graphics quality because all of the hardware is on your PlayStation.
Yeah.
But again, that comes with the drawback that you need to be connected to internet. So like, it's still not able to be used really on trains or planes, all of that kind of
that
stuff.
That is the one downside.
Which is a drawback. But again, you know, When Jess went to Mexico the other week with work, there's Wi-Fi on planes now. It's really common. She was like messaging me from the air on the way to Mexico. So with the way everything's trending, it probably isn't that long until like really fast Wi-Fi is available on trains and planes. And it's like, they don't make you spend loads of money for it. And it's just a thing that we have now.
Yeah.
Like that's not miles away. And this kind of device then would really kind of, that would take it into a different stratosphere totally. But for now, it's kind of just changed my relationship with gaming and it's made it a lot more accessible and a lot less taxing. Even if it takes the same time, it feels different. And it feels like, if you're not that gaming is overly draining anyway, but it just feels like it's like more accessible and just less of an activity. It's just kind of like it's just easier. And it's been really interesting. I've only had it for like 10 days, but it's been interesting.
I support it.
You endorse this message?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, what I'm taking out, and it goes against the mission statement of the podcast, really. Nice. I'm trying to be more positive. Now, overall, that's not really who I am, but I do think, I don't want to be one of those like miserable fucks who is just like sad about everything. And I do know one friend, this person definitely doesn't listen, but I still need to be somewhat careful. And whenever I talk to this person about anything, like it always gets brought back to like what is wrong in their life.
Right, okay.
You know, it's like, oh God. You know, when I told this person that I was going to be a dad, they were like, oh God, and I'm still single. And I was just like, that's a fucking crazy reaction. But like, generally speaking as well, like it's kind of like that with everything. And I don't think I'm like that. I think I'm quite positive with my friends, certainly. Like I'm positive about their lives. But this house move has been fucking stressful. Like it's been horrible. And it's horrible at the moment because we're like commuting an hour and a half, like round trip twice a day to take the baby to nursery. Yeah. Like it's a fucking disaster. But I said to my wife the other day, I was trying to cheer her up and I accidentally said something that was true because I was like, you know what? Like we are about to move to a bigger house. We've got one healthy baby and we've got another girl on the way and we always wanted two girls. Like Emma is getting her book published, which is like the fulfillment of a lifelong ambition. I am making, you know, like I'm in this new career that I like, that, well, I say new, this career that I've been working towards for a long time. And all this kind of, and also my wife likes her day job too. Like we're really fortunate. If I'd looked at this, if you'd presented this to me 5 years ago as what my life would look like, I'd be like, holy shit, that sounds incredible. Absolutely. And yet I don't feel like I do a very good job at enjoying it. And I'm sure, you know, somebody will have like a neuroscience expertise and will be able to correct me on this. But my understanding is that like synaptic kind of like pathways, neural pathways in your brain, mm-hmm. essentially become faster the more they're used. So essentially your brain like does develop sort of habits, like paths of thinking that it then falls into, like they're natural ruts. I think you could interpret this metaphorically or literally, but I think my understanding is that this is like literally true. But I think it's certainly true, like metaphorically, where like if you get into the mindset of like seeing everything bad about something, you do see everything bad about something. And I'm a naturally anxious person.
Mm-hmm.
Like I always worry about things. But you do, if you are that sort of person, you do just end up sometimes like thinking, well, this week's going to be terrible because of X and Y, so I just want to get to the end of it. And then like you get to the end of it and you're like, well, I've lost that week. And that week, okay, maybe it didn't matter that much from like the point of view of work or whatever, but it did matter from the point of view of like, that was a week of like my daughter being two. Like mm-hmm. it was a week with my wife. It was also a week where I was 34 and not like old.
Yeah.
I was like physically well, like all that sort of stuff. So I'm not saying that I'm gonna like, there was a guy I used to see at park run who would like run along and he would like trail his hand in bushes as he ran, you know, like, and smile as he ran. And I was just like, this motherfucker has beaten some disease. Like this guy, like he was taking so much joy in being alive that I was like, what's going on with this guy?
Yeah.
I'm never gonna be that guy. I don't want to be that guy, but I do think that like it would be nice to enjoy my life a little bit more, to appreciate it a little bit more. So I want to try and get into the habit of being a bit more content with the stuff I have and a bit less willing to wish away my life with the aim of getting, you know, past some job I'm dreading. I just think that that's like, I'm 34 and I think, man, I barely enjoyed my 20s. In fact, I didn't really. I kind of hated my 20s and I didn't enjoy being a kid.
Mm.
So like, what the fuck have I enjoyed in my life? Like, not that much. That's bullshit. So I kind of want to put that right while I'm still fucking young and I am like fit and well. I've got a healthy child. I've got a healthy wife.
Yeah.
You know, I've got my parents. Like I've got friends. Like I'm very fortunate. So it's just like fucking stupid, I think, to be like such a negative Nelly about it, Peter.
It's something I've thought about a bit over the years, in that like there are times in my, like I'll look back at periods in my life and I'll be like, that was amazing. Like I wish I could have that period back.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel that I fully appreciated that period in the time I was in that period, and I can never get it back now.
Yeah.
And it feels like, and whether it's rose tinted glasses, that's probably a part of it, but it's like there are a few periods in my life, places where I've lived, or like friendship groups when everybody was together who have now all split up and gone different, live in different places or are just in different places personally. That can never be recreated. That will never be recreated. But the disappointing thing is that you probably could have enjoyed it a lot more in that time because it was great, but you were too focused on other things or things that weren't as good or things that weren't right. And then now I as two very negative people, I fully endorse this message from Patrick Mishradin. It's a weird thing with, I suppose, the way, I don't know about you, but me at least, the way I like look or experience things, it's often too late for me to fully appreciate them. They're often gone by the time I'm like, I probably should have enjoyed that more, or at least my recollection of it is like, it's obviously a lovely part of my life, but maybe I could have just enjoyed it a bit more.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it does feel uncomfortable though, doesn't it, to try and be positive?
It's really unnatural.
Yeah, especially on the public side.
Yeah,
like on the paid side, it makes sense that we would make an effort. But here, yeah. why are we even bothering? Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to an end of the public episode. If you are subscribed, then you will catch us on the paid side. If you're not subscribed, then consider subscribing. We've had a load of new subscriptions recently, and we really appreciate your support. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to the people who sent me screenshots from their Spotify Wrapped saying that we were their most listened to podcast this year. One guy had listened to like 100 hours of our podcast, and I was like, have we even done 100 hours? And then Emma was like, are you serious? Like, it's so fucking long. And I was like, oh yeah.
I think this is episode 30 or 31, and we do
two
episodes, and
we do about each hour,
usually about between an hour and an hour and a half.
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah. All right. Well, we will see you over on the paid side, or if not, we'll see you next time. Thanks very much for listening. Bye.